and welcome to the DM's Book Club, a weekly book club podcast where we talk about some Dungeons & Dragons and discuss how we might include them in our role-playing campaigns. With me back again, I get onto the Zoom room, there she is.
I never left, Fiona.
You never left?
I've been here the whole time.
Hello, Emily Bates. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing really well, thank you, Fiona. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. I was thinking a lot about witch light discussion stuff, because that's the first time for a long time we've actually, but myself, I've gone back into an adventure and I've read it from top to bottom. Yeah. I was going to ask, because I know you've had a session of Wild Beyond the Witchlight since we last spoke. How did that go?
It went really well. So I can't remember if I said last time, but I had a guest player coming down, friend of ours. I mean, I can say his name. I don't know why I'm being coy about it. Ed Spence. If anyone knows Ed Spence, do go check his stuff out. He's brilliant. He's normally a GM, but I got him to be a player. The game I run is mainly with my uni friends. This is their first D&D game they've ever played. Mm-hmm. So I'm very much just trying to like coax them in and be like, hey guys, come on in to D&D. It's going to be great. But I brought Ed in to be like, hey, cool. Can you like gut punch them?
Yeah, let's get the bar and then just properly like clothesline them with it.
And so he came in, he ended up playing a red cap who was from one of these dark domains, so which we'll get onto. So the way what I've added to the Witchlight Carnival is... Wild Beyond the Witchlight is the fact that the Domains of Dread and the Domains of Delight are starting to come together because of Zabilna being frozen. And that's a very bad thing, and they don't want that to happen. Mm-hmm. So, he has come through, and he's come through because he's actually working for one of the Dark Lords who is trying to escape into Prismia because of it. And was also slightly tied into one of the characters' backstories. So I gave him a few things, and he just like dropped little nuggets, and I could see this other player being like, that's interesting that you said that. And it was really subtle stuff. And also, when you have a player like that who you know is coming in for one session, and you know you can give them a load of secrets and you trust them to just sort of sprinkle.
Yeah,
I did so little that session.
Yeah,
I just sat there and went, okay, here's Ed's character. Off you all go.
You have fun.
And then they just started talking and they fought Bavalorna. They killed Bavalorna. That was great. And he was kind of pretending to be on their side, and then went, and because he wanted Bavalorna dead too. And when Bavalorna died, he filled up his red cap, as they all want to do, with her blood, and then sort of dropped one final thing and then poofed out. So that is part of the ritual to bring this Dark Lord through to Prismia. That is stage one complete from their side. So
how exciting.
Very exciting. I actually properly need to create that Dark Lord and their domain.
That's a problem for later, Emily.
All I know is they're working on some kind of thing, but it is definitely for a later Emily, because that's, you know, that's definitely like the beginning.
I feel like if you're a DM that's managed to get everything planned in advance, this is my design. I think, first of all, amazing. You're more organized than I think 99% of us. But also, I do think sometimes that means that you're not flexible. Again, big generalization, but like if you're like, oh, they've not gone the way I needed them to,
what do I do?
This huge, big towering structure. Yeah. Do we move the structure over to them?
And the answer is always yes, move your structure, but like, let it bend. Let it bend.
Yeah, let it bend in the breeze.
Bend and sway.
Very exciting. And yeah, because we both know Ed very well. Like, obviously, takes the assignment, understands the assignment, and then absolutely aces it. So I like the fact that you were like, yeah, I don't know how to do much. And you're like, yeah, because Ed just was like, cool, I will.
I'll do this for you. And one of the players messaged me, like, after the session and was like, it was so cool, like, watching Ed do it. Like, we all got into it so much more. And I actually don't think they necessarily did, but they just relaxed a little bit more than I think they normally do.
Encouraged a bit more to do it, yeah.
And they were like, oh, no, he's gone, we're going to have to bring it. And I was like, yeah, it's good, good, good. So I'm really happy.
And that's such good feedback as well. Because I think, some people get very, like, maybe nervous about what they're doing. And maybe, like, oh, we're not all on the same page or whatever. Even though you're right, you probably absolutely are.
Yeah.
They're just a bit more insecure about it. But yeah, as soon as you've got someone else who does this fairly regularly, both as a GM, as a player, and then they're like, oh, we're okay to be big, silly characters or be able to lean into it more. So, nice. Oh, I'm glad they had a good time.
Yeah, it was really great. It was really good. Very pleased with how it went. I love Wild Beyond the Witchlight. I really do. It's whimsy, but then you can like really like trick them. It's great.
From Wild Beyond the Witchlight to our topic today. So Emily, what are we talking about today? What is our topic of choice?
So we're delving into a different book, but a very similar theme. We are looking at The Carnival from Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft.
Yeah.
So this is, for those who don't know, the, I guess, sister or like the mirror carnival to Wild Beyond the Witchlights, which is the Feywild. And this is the one that roams. We do believe roams the domains of
travels. Yes, it seems like to be like a traveling plane. There are other planes, I think, in this book. I will say, like, at some point, I'm sure we'll go through every single domain of dread. And obviously, Emily, if you're along for the ride for those ones, we can absolutely do that.
I have to do some more reading.
Oh, yes. And I think there's like a plane, which is like a ghost train. And it's just the way you're on the ghost train for that. But that's the only other ones that I know that move around. Like you said, this is almost like the sibling carnival, which is sort of slightly referenced in Wild Beyond the Witchlight.
Very briefly, yeah.
I'm going to have to look it up. I think this book came first before Wild Beyond the Witchlight.
I think it did too. I think it was a way of teasing, but I think it was quite close to Wild Beyond the Witchlight.
Yes.
Witchlight was almost definitely in production, and so this was a little like teaser for it maybe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And actually, I wonder if, because it says Wandering Domain of Wonders at the top of the section in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the Witchlight Carnival isn't in a domain. It's not a domain. It's its own little bubble that travels around the material plane.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if the carnival, it doesn't have another name, so we will just be calling it the carnival.
The carnival, yes.
I wonder if it is just this pocket of Ravenloft that, is it all Ravenloft, the Domains of Dreads?
It's interchangeable, I think, because Barovia is the one that people will be most familiar with in terms of like, that is where Strahd is, etc. And from there, Ravenloft was sort of like the castle, etc. And then it's just now become this all-expansive Ravenloft, Domains of Dread is sort of
almost
interchangeable.
Almost like the Shadowfell kind of.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. So it's all interchangeable a little bit. But yeah, Domains of Dread, and this is signified as one. But as you said, we'll come on to like why we think maybe...
It's not, yeah.
Yeah, the boundaries of it are a bit different. Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft is a fantastic source book. Very well structured.
Oh, it's lovely.
The main, she says in quotation, main Domains of Dread that goes into it literally like a page and a half. And it's very structured about like who the Dark Lord is, what are noteworthy features, etc. Yeah. Here's some adventure hooks. So if you're like, I want to have a darker place, but I don't want it to be Barovia, or maybe I want to do the carnival, but I'm not sure. It is a very simple read that you can maybe dip your toes in for a session or two of your players and then travel through the mists to somewhere else.
That's kind of what I've done for Witchlight, right? Was I haven't read all of Van Richten's, but I've read the sort of first couple of chapters and I've skimmed through the different domains, and they have the creating a Dark Lord section, and I really like it. I do think you can dip toe in and
absolutely.
I haven't read any of the further chapters that are like, there's like a little mini adventure in there, isn't there? I think.
Yeah, there's something called the Death House, which has different endings as well. Again, it's a really good read for introducing people to it and using, I don't know if you know, but so there's like the sidekick characters where basically, you know, it's supposed to be like for people who maybe aren't au fait with all the rules, or you want to have like an NPC, but they have someone who I think they call them survivors. So again, in that horror theme of like, oh, they're just the mundane people that are just forced into these situations and stuff, and using them as a way to play as NPCs, are a little bit more than NPCs, but a little bit less than actual player characters as well. So there is something for everyone in this book. And again, you could always take the horror themes out, even though it is pretty horror themes on that front.
It's pretty horror it's pretty coded. Horror. Yeah, this is a Fiona special book, this one.
So first of all, it is just called The Carnival, whereas obviously the other carnival is called The Witchlight Carnival. And in my head, reading this through, like it talks about like the idea that you know this carnival is coming to town because of these random flyers that come about. Mm-hmm. It arrives and it stays for a little while, but the longer it stays in town, the more dangerous it becomes because there's more bad things start to go wrong, etc. But in my head, because there is no name of this carnival per se, I just like the idea that anytime you look at it, it's almost like gibberish, like, you know, again, past AI text of it, just like you can't actually get what the name of the carnival is because it's just constantly having to change and constantly having to move and go through stuff. I just like the idea, you look at a banner and you're like, I have no idea what it's called. There's words there, and then you look and it's something different as well.
It's different, and it's changed. Yeah, and the idea being that it constantly travels because if it's not just dangerous for the place it goes to, it's dangerous for the carnival if it stays still as well. And I don't feel like it really goes into why it's dangerous for the people in the carnival. But I think that's a really interesting thing to go along with it, is that the carnival needs to travel as well. It isn't just traveling because it's getting like run out of town, or, you know, that you don't want to stay too long because then the, you know, fantasy police will come and kill them. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that is it. Maybe that's why they don't stay.
I think it's a mixture of both. It talks about like bad things happening to the place that they are settled in. So then people grow resentment towards the troops rather than, say, the marketplace, which also follows in its wake.
Yes.
But also this idea that there are always some sort of fey creatures always following or always coming up to catch up with it.
Mm.
And it makes me think of, like, we talked about like the Jabberwock even in Wild Beyond the Witchlight. And this idea is like, like some sort of creature that's in the background that you won't necessarily face until right at the end. And I just wondered, like, is that you just turn up at this carnival for whatever reason and then suddenly some horrible, I don't know, shadow monster appears. Mm. You're like, oh, we're here. Oh, no.
Like, it's like, have you watched It Follows? The horror 100% movie.
It like that. Has vibes of It Follows, that you just see something in the background walking very, very slowly towards you with purpose. It's so good.
Weird film. Like, is it meant to be an analogy for STIs? I don't know. Because if it is, it's bad because you can't get rid of an STI by killing the person that gave it to you. Or no, you can't get rid of an STI by giving it to someone else. That's not how they work, everyone.
I mean, I don't know. Some sort of advice you're giving Emily Bates.
I'm actively saying you do not get rid of STIs by having sex with someone else and giving them that. Yeah, that's not how it works. Do not do that.
Yeah, go to your NHS.
Go to the doctor, yeah.
What I like about that particular film, and again, sort of feeds into it, yeah, that idea that no matter, you can't outrun what you've done in the past. And for me, the allegory for that film, and maybe here as well, is that the past actions are always there. So there's talk of this idea of forgetting and being focused on a task and trying not to forget certain things that comes quite clear in this sort of thing. But the idea that it's always there, and maybe being judged, as the ideas of judgment as well, the past things. That's why I really actually enjoyed reading about this carnival, because I think what we just kind of discussed off podcast was that there's stuff in here where you go, oh, I want more of it. And then some of it you're like, I don't know if this works, but then I already feel like I can pull that apart and change it to how I want to with that.
100%.
The one thing I want to say straight off the top is that there's no carnival games in this chapter, which feels very sad considering if we look at the Witchlight Carnival.
There's a Hall of Horrors. I quite like the Hall of Horrors.
The horrors, yeah. So noteworthy features, obviously we've got the big top, we've got the sideshow things, which I feel could be an interesting sort of one-on-one encounters with these different carnival troupiers, and that could be interesting, but it's not like a game for you to play. But yeah, that Hall of Horrors sounds disgusting, I've got to be honest. Yeah. That's frightening.
And Professor Pacali?
I think it's Pacali, yeah.
Ah, Gully. It feels like he might be Italian.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, taxidermic creatures, cabinets of curiosities, peculiar specimens in jars, and the occasional true wonder. I like that, the idea.
Occasionally.
That, like, most of the time it's just fake, but this one is a little bit special.
It could easily be, like, as we talked about unicorns before, I like the idea that there is an actual unicorn there or something.
Yeah.
Again, there's lots of little details. You're like, wait, what was that? And like, Pacali has this secret where his worst impulses grow from his body as terrible creatures. And it reminded me a little bit of the Zabilna's also, like, got those creatures in the Heart's Desire castle.
Yeah.
It's just like, why is everything manifesting as horrible creatures?
Yes. Can things manifest as nice butterflies or, you know, pretty. But yes, no, there's no games, is there? There's nothing you can go and do sort of actively that it gives you like little rules for, which is, I guess, fine. It's creating a domain, isn't it?
But I wonder, again, maybe if it is like a mirror of the Witchlight Carnival, but maybe you just take those Witchlight games and just twist it so that maybe you're riding skeleton nightmare creatures instead of snails, you know, that sort of thing. You just twist it around a little bit.
It's just for flavour, isn't it, really, I guess? And then you make it a bit more deadly.
Yeah.
Rather than custard damage that they do, it's just damage. Like, you're just eating.
Soul damage.
Soul damage. Oh, no. Blood-filled parties or something. Blech. We sort of call it the sibling, but it really is, to the point that in the Witchlight Carnival, the two owners are Shadokai, and they used to run the carnival.
Yeah.
And they crossed paths with, well, I guess then it's hard to get the timing of this order right, I guess. Do you want to talk about Isolde? And
yeah, I'll talk about Isolde. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you'll also have another. So the sort of two people who run this carnival, although one of them is only the Dark Lord, we've got Isolde and then we've got Nepethi. Now, Isolde is an Eladrin, an elf native to the Feywild, was seen as like basically like a holy warrior devoted to like this pantheon of elven deities, and just, you know, defended the Feywild against things. But she did basically, too good at her job, too powerful, too vengeful, you know.
Real good.
And it's our wonderful friend Zabilna got a bit cross because she's dealing away with all these fiends and devils and stuff that she had made pacts with. So Zabilna is like, well, I know what I do. So she sort of summons this creature called the Caller, which, again, is described only a little bit in Van Richter's Guide to Ravenloft, but this idea of this thing that pretends to be something else and then corrupts people.
Yeah.
You know me and my betrayers. I'm like, instantly, like, ooh, I want to use that for all my games.
Yes.
and having this caller creature corrupt and then kill off all of Isolde's companions, leaving her completely alone and isolated. And then Zabilna sort of stepping in going, oh, that's so sad. You don't have all your friends.
I'll be your friend.
Let me help you. And sort of creating this pact with her to help her, like,
get over it.
Yeah. And what's interesting then, sort of the next couple of years, so she's in charge of the Witchlight Carnival, but is using it as a way to forget the horrors of, you know, this incredibly terrible trauma. Again, it sort of describes it a little bit that Zabilna and Isolde's sort of relationship sort of grows very distant to the point it sours. Because of Eladrin's, they love change. They, you know, they're based on seasons, so they're going to change, and she feels stuck. And while she can't necessarily remember why she's here or what she's doing, you know, she feels like something's wrong. And Zabilna is like using stuff like wish spells to keep her in place.
Spoilers for Witchlight, but obviously Zabilna, she's big deal.
Yeah.
It is quite like to the point that I think there, I can't remember if we said it last time. I read a thing that Prismir could actually be a domain of dread.
Yeah.
And it's actually like Zabilna's domain of dread, but not really. But, you know, if the Dark Lords wanted to turn it into this domain of dread, maybe they would, because Zabilna's done some pretty awful stuff, because she's Dasha. Like, she's not a goodie. And, like, this stuff is awful that she's doing. You know, she kills Isolde's friends to keep her.
It feels like she focuses so much on Isolde, as if, like she takes it as a great, I don't know what the word is now, but, like, great offence that, you know, this person's doing her job. I said, well, this, it's almost like losing lots of stock or shares. Yeah. And that goes, well, I take this as a great insult of me. And then, but her action is just to make Isolde's life miserable or control her in some way. Because it says she's not disappointed or angry with her, just impressed by her.
Right.
I don't think that's the right word for it.
I think she must be angry, because I think they wrote this sentence rather than be angry at Isolde. Zabilna was impressed by her. And then they went, no, she must be a little bit angry, because she doesn't just sort of like befriend her to stop her doing what she's doing.
Yeah.
He kills all of her friends in a like really horrible way, like corrupts them first, then kills
like
them.
Hires an assassin technically to do this. Yeah.
And then goes to her and is like, oh, I'll be your friend. And like, I get the idea that she wanted her in a vulnerable place so she could use her, but she doesn't then really use her. Like, she just puts her in the carnival, and like, I feel like Zabilna could have put anyone in the carnival. So it feels like this is a bit of a punishment as well. It's not truly just her being impressed.
Yeah, I feel like maybe, because you talked about it last time about Zabilna, obviously said the Tasha stuff. So by the time she's in the Feywild and has Prismir, and this turns from sort of Tasha, you know, human wizard who deals with demons, to a fey creature, there's something about the fey that changes and influences her. I feel like this could have been at a point before that happens, that she's still more human and more vindictive.
More Tasha.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so as she's changing, obviously, then Isolde isn't changing. And then it's almost at heads. Because I what's interesting as well is that Isolde is maybe one of only a couple of female presenting Dark Lords. There are more than this in Ravenloft, but it's interesting just to see that relationship between like Zabilna and Isolde, only in a couple of paragraphs. And you think to yourself, oh, in another lifetime, maybe they could have been really good friends or like worked together and stuff. But just the way of circumstances just turns them against each other, because maybe they're envious of each other's powers and changing and stuff. Then the carnivals then cross over and she meets, I can't remember their names off the top of my head, but
They're Mr. Witch and Mr. Light in the book. They don't get given another, or do they get, you might get their other names, I think.
They do have other names in their backstory, but again, we talked about this last time, the backstories are like, oh, you'll never know.
It's like a tiny box on one page and you're like, oh, wait, that's really, oh, it's gone.
Oh, it's gone, it's gone. And so she meets the two Shadokai owners of this, the carnival, and because they're looking to get out of, you know, the Shadowfell.
The dark domain,
They just go, hey, why don't we switch?
That must have been so sneaky from them. They're like, she wants out, but like, they're like,
God.
I'll take the nice shiny carnival that people want to go to. That seems lovely. Yes, please.
I can't imagine in the real world any two businesses, hey, we've met at a convention.
Trades.
Same thing, right?
I quite like it. Yeah, because I guess she wants to escape the carnival. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine it, right? The two carnivals, and they get together because they've both pitched their tents like right next on like the other side of a wood. And then they go to meet to like discuss, oh, who's going to get all the tickets and things. And they both realize that the other one isn't particularly happy. And someone's like, well, what if we just switch them? No.
And the next time we meet, we'll switch back.
Yeah. No harm, no foul. Or they did the like, you know, oh, it's so much harder running my carnival than yours. Like, it would be so easy to run your carnival. And yes. So they're like, well, you know what? I'll show you how difficult it is. And so they swap.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Yes. It's more of a bluffing type. Like, I can do anything. But now what's interesting is that both in Witchlight and in this, there is that worry about when we next meet, we have to revert back.
Which is Zabilna's doing, right?
Which is Zabilna's doing.
Zabilna says, you can only do this if the next time you cross paths again.
Yes. But then the Dark Lord of this place isn't, in fact, Isolde. It is this magical sentient weapon called a Nepenthe, which I did look up because I was like, first of all, how do you pronounce such a word?
I was saying Nepenthe.
Nepenthe. It says on Wikipedia, obviously the best place for all these things, possibly a fictional medicine for sorrow, a drug of forgetfulness mentioned in ancient Greek literature, which I thought was really interesting, that idea of like, you forgetting your past, but it's sort of, what is it? It said, it literally means not sorrow or anti-sorrow as the name of it. And I just thought that was just such an interesting name for it. So Nepenthe is itself was used as a weapon to kill convicted criminals of their crimes. But the sword itself cannot tell the difference between guilty and not guilty, which is wild. As there's a second sentence to that first sentence I found, I was like, wow, it just is like, I just want justice. Yeah. And then being paired up with Isolde after some sort of, it's been handed into lost property at the carnival.
So this is where we get a bit confused with the carnival and the Domain of Dread.
Yes.
So they list the carnival as a Domain of Dread.
Mm-hmm.
Domains of Dread are created for their Dark Lords.
Yes, that's what I believe it to be.
So they are created around the Dark Lords as a form of punishment.
Yeah.
However, Nepenthe came to the carnival in the hands of a retired half-ogre. So came to the carnival.
Yeah.
So that means the carnival existed before.
Yeah.
There was a Dark Lord. So is it because the sword, like over time, just did another bad thing, and rather than creating a new Domain of Dread, they just turned the carnival that Nepenthe was in into the Domain of Dread to fix it there? Is it only once Isolde got here that it became a Domain of Dread? Is it the partnership between Isolde and her like lust for vengeance along with Nepenthe? Is that what created the Domain of Dread?
Yeah, that's what it's trying to...
Is that what it's implying?
I think that's what it's implying, because it says like the sword was given to Isolde by the carnival's previous owner, so the Shadokai, claiming that the sword would help her protect the carnival against any threat. But then the sword found this partner in Isolde, sharing its blind malice towards guilty. And Isolde uses Nepenthe to behead anyone found guilty of stealing from the carnival or inflicting harm upon it, which is wild. Again,
like in the Witchlight, everyone's like, oh, these damn hags just taking, you know, one little item from me because I snuck in. In this one, no, head.
You got a handful of sweets? Dead. Yeah. It said, as soon as Isolde took up the blade, it rekindled the grief and fury she had suppressed for so long, awakening the desire to avenge her long dead companions by slaying the fiend she knows as the Caller. As a result, the way the sword sort of channels it, she now chooses where the carnival goes based on her predictions of where the Caller is. So again, it's this idea of vengeance quest. But I think if you took the sword away from her, which is incredibly difficult to do, she will be broken free of this partnership, because it's the sword that's using it. And of course, we have like in D&D in general, like all sentient items, magical items, which then curse the person that's playing it, because you shouldn't be playing around with these sorts of things. But I agree, it feels like it just so happens that someone that was very lost and alone and afraid, like treated quite poorly by Zabilna, and this sword that just so happens just has one purpose to bring them together, creates one new person, but ultimately the sword is kind of in charge. Or that's what at least it says.
It definitely implies that. And, you know, it sort of says, unlike Isolde, whose motives are good, the sword is corrupt and irredeemable, hence why the sword is the Dark Lord. Because, like, Isolde's if her motives are good, oh, hun, you should not be in a Domain of Dread. Yeah. Like, you don't belong there.
But it makes me think that if, for whatever reason, that Isolde is able to break free, it makes me feel that the sword will then go to the next person. Like, I wonder if it is just attracted to it. Because I don't know, because obviously magical weapons, you have to go into it. There's like this sort of idea of consent that you pick it up and you go, yes, I will bond or whatever.
Tune, yes.
But I wonder if here, the Dark Lord, maybe because it is so sentient and it has this power, I think it would just maybe try and attach to someone else instantly. Because it needs someone else to wield it to do these things.
Was it attached to Witch and Light, or did the sword arrive post Witch and Light? Like,
that's so true. Yeah, because it talks about somebody as a sword swallower and then they died. And they say, how did the sword swallower pick this up?
Sure, Nepenthe was like, I'm just going to keep going, stabby, stabby.
Slowly but surely, like, oh, an esophagus, nick that. Yeah,
have a bit of that, yeah. And then actually, this is something I was going to ask, but I've just seen the paragraph. Mm. It travels through the mists and between other domains of dread as Isolde pleases. Mm. So, although the dark powers occasionally send it off course, so I guess the dark powers could send it to the material plane, but why would they?
No.
The dark powers are meant to be like keeping these people away from everyone else. That's the whole point of why they make the domains of dread. The dark powers create the dark lords. The dark powers aren't necessarily evil. That always confuses me. I get like it always just sort of. I feel like they shouldn't be called the dark powers. So it makes them sound baddies.
Because ultimately, these domains, they are prisons. They're supposed to keep these people in, and every so often to stop them doing something like silly, like breaking out. That's where people get fed into them. But what I think is interesting about the carnival, it talks about this idea of like people running away from their problems. And if anyone wants to join the carnival, they so can do, as long as they pull their weight. And it's that idea of like not looking back. And we have some of the adventure hooks. A family member has gone missing and they think they've gone to the carnival. So it's that, again, could be an interesting way of like learning about this carnival, like you're running away from your past. And maybe everyone at the carnival, anyone that works there,
away from something.
Has run away. Maybe they've had some sort of crime. But I think that's what I like the idea is that no matter what their past is, they're being judged for anything that happens in the carnival, hence Isolde and Nepenthe's sort of like judgment. But maybe they're just, everyone's just so frightened of them that they don't get out of line. I don't know. It's just very interesting about suddenly getting this, because Isolde has this like, she's focused on like, where's the caller, when's the next stop, etc. And then is almost bothered by like, oh, we've run out of sticky toppy puddings. You know, so I quite like the idea that she maybe comes across as very angry and gruff, but then it isn't like that.
She's just trying to make the carnival a good place to be. And it's a really fascinating chapter. I don't think I'd have paid it much attention had it not been for the witchlight. And I love that crossover, and I wish there was more in witchlight about it, because I think this is so interesting. Like Isolde and Mr. Witch and Mr. Light, their relationship must be fascinating. And I might try and work in the carnival's crossing.
Well, that's what you were thinking, wasn't it, last time we spoke about it?
It's just how you do it. Do you know what I mean? It's so maybe I'll have the carnival where the Witchlight Carnival was when they returned to the material plane.
Ooh, that'd be good.
They'll be like, oh, cool, there's still a carnival there. Let's go see it. And then it will actually end up being this one, and that will be bad. But yeah, why? And maybe Mr. Witch and Light are there because they've had to trade back. But then, well, that's it. When Mr. Witch and Light arrive, Nepenthe isn't going to want to go back to them.
Well, and Isolde doesn't want Nepenthe to leave. There is that sort of like symbiotic relationship as well. So there is that fear. But this is the thing, at the timing of While Beyond the Witchlight, for a lot of it, Zabilna is frozen.
Yeah.
So if they should cross before Zabilna is reawakened, then you're like, are they able to be like, okay, I don't think she knows.
She's not looking.
It was nice to see you. Here's some sweets. Good luck with a sword, you know?
Witch and Light don't want to go back. They're really happy with their new carnival. It says in Witchlight they are keen not to cross paths again, particularly Mr. Light, I believe.
It's so interesting just to write something like that, which is like just a page and a half, and then go, where else can we go from here? And that's why I was like, oh, the Domains of Dread, like some of them are much longer, like Barovia. I mean, everyone knows Barovia, so we'll do a lot on it. But I just thought there's something about this, the idea that it travels. There's two Dark Lords. There's a sort of back history of, you know, two very powerful, or I don't like using the word strong per se, but sort of very characterized individuals. What will happen if any player stepped into this carnival? I don't know what would happen. Sometimes, you know, in Dark Domains, you're like, oh, okay, so this is going to happen. These characters are going to go up against us. We're here. I'm actually not sure what would happen if any of the players I know stepped into this carnival and had no idea about this backstory. Because obviously, again, we've talked about this before, like we can't just drip feed stuff. So this is stuff that maybe they would find out later or do tomes and stuff. But I just wonder, like, I don't know what their impact on the story would be and what would happen as a result. I know what could happen in the sense of like, it completely disintegrates because they try and take the sword off her. One of them may die because they get beheaded, you know.
What happens if Nepenthe gets destroyed? Does the carnival go away? Because in theory, yes, because it's their domain. So, and is that right? If you destroy a Dark Lord, the domain crumbles?
I don't know, actually.
Why do I think that? That might not be true.
There's a mixture of yes and no, but I think there's also a way that Dark Lords, because they're so powerful, they do get resurrected, and maybe they live through their punishment bit by bit. But this is the thing, I don't know, because this is a very different Dark Domain to any other domain.
That's it. This does not function like the other dark domains.
It makes sense, like, because obviously if you realize that it's the sword doing it, because, you know, the sword is telepathic, but it speaks through its wielder, which is terrifying possession level stuff, which I think would be amazing. But it's just, what would happen if that was to happen? What happened if, you know, Isolde passed away? Which, she, again, elves live for a long, long time, I know, but, like, if something happened...
Yeah. What if they catch up to the caller and the caller kills Isolde as well? Like...
Yeah. With the caller, because I know they've got like stats of like a succubus or an incubus or whatever, because they can take on the form. They're like the ultimate mimic, it talked about in the book, this idea of like trying to like manipulate and then isolate you even more. It'll be interesting because I bet the caller doesn't know about this weapon, about Nepethy. And then it even says like Nepethy sometimes speaks to Isolde through the voices of her fallen companions. You're like, well, this is a negative, toxic relationship.
God. Oh, it's not a good relationship. Get out.
Maybe that's what I'd play it as. Again, you know, lines and veils are, so maybe I would play it as like it is a symbiotic relationship, but of these partner that is like, you don't need any friends. You got me. I'm so sad that you're friends now, but don't worry. We'll do it together. I'm here. Everything's fine. You said the carnival moves in and out and stuff. You can close the borders, as with all dark domains. Nepethy can be like, I close the borders, no one can leave. And this particular domain is like a couple of hundred feet across, so you can't really get anywhere. The sword can do it at will, but only with the sword's consent can Isolde close the borders.
So Isolde could be like, we need to close the borders.
Yeah.
And the sword's like, No, don't think I'm going to.
Or the other way around, open the borders and no one leaves, you know. So again, it could be quite cool if suddenly Isolde realizes what the sword is doing and then
tries to escape. Maybe that's where the party, your whole party comes in and tries to help Isolde break the bond with Nepethy. But then, you know, do you have to kill Isolde for that? Like, how do you... Now, Isolde is also only challenge rating 5. But I assume that's when she's not carrying...
A big-ass sword.
Yeah, who is, you know, a legendary item.
I feel I would beef her up a little bit in her stats, because I feel like...
I think she deserves it.
I don't think you should be fighting Dark Lords necessarily on the off. Like, you should, you know, they're supposed to be scary and stuff. And if you've got a party of, like, what's that? Challenge rating 5, so that's 4 players of 5th level would find that a hard difficulty. And I'm like, yeah, but...
The Dark Lord, beef her up, I think. Well, she's not, though. That's the thing. She's not.
It needs to be like her transformation, right? So her plus Nepethy, almost like that final evolution sort of bit. And then if it's the connection is broken, that's when she comes back down to that
stat, perhaps. I like that.
But I think then it should give you that stat block rather than making you work it out for yourself.
And, you know, this is all with Nepethy. And she's got plane shift.
Amazing. Well, so she could get out if you wanted to.
Well, but can she? Because Isolde could then. Because Nepethy can't, because they're the Dark Lord, in theory. But does Isolde only have plane shift because of Nepethy, probably?
That's an interesting dilemma, then. If you're like, she's like, I can go, but I can't leave, not without the sword. And interesting. The other thing to mention as well, because obviously we've got like the carnival itself, but there is like a market that comes behind it.
Litwick Market.
Wherever it goes, the fey creatures chase after it, appearing on the carnival's outskirts as mysterious merchants selling dangerous enemas, not enemas, enigmas.
Well, maybe
not enemas. Whoa,
maybe a couple of enemas in there. Dangerous enemas, geez.
Dangerous. I mean, that's a different kind of carnival. That and Miss Talismans, which I quite like about the Miss Talismans. Again, this is something in all of the Ravenloft book. The idea that you can move through to a different domains of dread if you've got a certain talisman. So again, somewhere you might come to go, I need to get into Lemuria or any of these other places. Can I get a talisman for that? And, you know, for this particular place, you've got talismans of like a flyer, a colourful ticket, or it just says a strange prize from a carnival game. So it makes me go, where are the carnival games? And also, what strange prizes are there? The tricks and accidents that increasingly become dangerous, potentially culminating in disasters for which the carnival troops
take the blame. But it's the market.
Yeah.
And also it calls it the market, appearing on the carnival's outskirts as mysterious merchants. But I quite like the idea that that's just their disguise.
Oh, yeah.
There is the market.
Yeah.
They do sell all this stuff. But actually, why are they chasing it? Like, what's in there that they want? Why are the fey creatures so drawn to the carnival?
To a very dark carnival. And yeah, it's not the same in the witch-like carnival.
No.
That's interesting.
I find that really... Like, are they compelled to? Is it not... You know, it's fae, so maybe there's something going on in there.
Maybe it's because of Isolde, because she is a fae Eladrin. Yeah. Maybe there's that. I don't know.
Are they trying to save her? Are they trying to tarnish the carnival's reputation by...
By selling stuff.
It surely has a bad reputation anyway. It's a Domain of Dread.
But it's stuff like, you know, they say they peddle lost memories or love potions for peculiar prices, such as the buyer's dreams or the ability to speak vowels, which sounds like an incredibly hard improv task that I would never force on anyone.
No vowels?
Yeah, no vowels.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically impossible. Yeah.
I mean, I like it, but I'm just like, I'm not giving you this task. Just say what you mean, but harder to persuade people because they have to decipher what you're saying.
But okay, so, and again, here, this makes it sound like the carnival goes not just through the domains of dread and the mist, but goes to, like, the material plane. That's what this sounds like to me.
Yeah.
But then why are the dark powers sending it to the material plane? Like, that's fascinating enough on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there's a lot of, like, interesting backstory that I would love to see expanded on the carnival.
Yeah. Lots of food for thought, I think, for this. And like I said, I think it's nice that we've come to this after looking at Witchlight, because then we're like, okay, sounds like what you were saying, that maybe this will come in your game towards the end, or maybe you just keep referencing it.
The domains of dread definitely will.
Yes, exactly.
I'm creating a domain of dread for one of the characters' mother to be trapped in. And... well, to be trapped, to be the Dark Lord of, not trapped in as such. And she's trying to get back. She's trying to get out through Prismia. But yeah, I do like the idea of bringing in the carnival as well somehow, just because to tie it all up in a nice little neat bow. Maybe it's how, like, Zabilna sends them back. It's like, oh, I'll send you back to the carnival. And
that
very sneaky fae thing of, like, I'll send you to the carnival.
Oh, I do quite like that.
And they're like, great, yeah, we'd love to go to the carnival. And she's like, yeah, I bet you've...
Bet you will, yeah.
Or maybe Zabilna's like, hey, look, I need you to get my carnival owner out.
Ooh.
Maybe they become an errand for Zabilna.
Yeah.
And be like, if the mists and the walls between the realms are weak at the moment, I can send you to the carnival. You need to free her and get rid of that sword. Maybe one of them picks up the sword.
Because Isolde could be quite powerful. So if she does realise what's happened... that she'd be straight after Zabilna, for sure.
Well, no, but she's forgotten Zabilna. So
She has.
We didn't say that, I don't think, but
no.
Zabilna took her memories when they did the swap.
Yes, that's right.
Which is interesting. That indicates to me that she knows who Zabilna is.
Or has worked it out in some way,
I think, and again, have I made this up? Or have I actually read it somewhere? It might just play into my idea of I like the fact that Zabilna could very easily end up in a domain of dread herself.
I think so.
But I wonder if, like, Zabilna going to Prismia and becoming an archfey, becoming Zabilna, is actually partly her trying to escape the dark powers.
Oh, 100%.
And so by Isolde going in where they are, she's like, well, you must not know anything about me, because that would be awful for me if you do.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Emily, for, like, diving in.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, it's good to come back to it. And, like, let's type all the little things, because we're like, where's this from? It's very much appreciated. Before we sign off, where can we find you? What cool, awesome projects have you got going on just now in tabletop RPG land?
Oh, gosh, what have I got going on? You can find me all over the internet at MZWB, E-M-Z-Y-W-B. I'm over at RP Geeks all the time. RP Geeks, D&D, I'm always there. You can catch our latest series. Currently, we've got a series of masks coming out, Mask New Generation, called Masks 2044.
It's very good.
Up very soon, which I'm very excited about, is Orbital Blues, starring Fiona and GM'd by the Ed Spence that I mentioned earlier.
Spence, Red Cap.
Yeah, Red Cap, Ed Spence. And that is a fabulous series. That starts at the beginning of April. So
it's very exciting. Yes. And you've got Blood on the Clock Tower stuff as well.
And we do Blood on the Clock Tower. We do first Monday of every month. We do a Blood on the Clock Tower stream where we play some Blood on the Clock Tower. It's very fun. I really enjoy it. I would like to do more of it, but people only have so many evenings, you know.
It's so true. We recently went through, like, we tried one of the Bad Moon Rising scripts, and that completely threw me, because I was like,
that was off camera,
but I was like,
that is what we're doing for the beginning of April.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, I better read up on all this stuff so that I have at least, I'm not going to be like drowning in it, but it was very fun and very different to Trouble Brewing.
Yeah, we'll be doing a Bad Moon Rising and another custom one, because the Patreon are voting currently on what characters are going to be in,
which
there.
I love the fact that you get your patrons be like, what characters should we put in, and then I look at all the characters that come up and I go, these are awful characters that I do not want to play, but I know those patrons are going to be like, nope, put you in it.
that's me, that's what I do, that's what we've got coming up.
Awesome.
And we did actually the other day, Fiona came on and we went through Daggerheart.
Yes.
And we had a look at the rules for that. And that was
Really nice. Sort of character creation with yourself and obviously Sharmini as well, the other happy geek. That was really fun. I'd love to do stuff like that again because that's just nice to talk through. Like, are we being silly or like, oh, this is great? And so
you
maybe.
You mean Porcelain Ariel Ceramos, the seaborn giant who had porcelain and no Tupperware lids and was trying to find the. Oh, no, had. I can't remember now. A lot of crockery.
Yeah, Tupperware, crockery. Like, we had a fun Friday afternoon, I think, is what we're trying to say.
It was fun. It was really good.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being here, Emily.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's good. It's good to chat again. Obviously, we'll get you back yet again at some point, I'm sure.
Please.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll do Tyranny of the Dragons and then both of us cry. Yeah. Oh, no, thank you.
We should do it. We should. But, oh, wow, I haven't read it for a really long time.
No, I don't worry. I'm not going to make you do it.
It's a lot of book.